it's G1 and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
This is a journey.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing.
I didn't know nothing about
it. I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
With the finger roll, plus the foul.
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Collision. He's a Tom Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW. This is where we're trying to change the world one broadcast at a time. And the Collision is where we talk about that very collision between sports and politics. A lot of sports going on in the nation's capital with the resurrection of Washington, D.C., the DMV, as a football town after the hibernation created by Daniel Snyder with the rise of Jaden Daniels, a.k.a. Jedi 5. I hope we have some time to talk about that. But as we all know in Washington, D.C., we are getting subsumed, drowned by politics right now of a variant that is as scary as anything I have seen in my lifetime. They are flooding the zone. The reactions are many. Tom Thomas, man, I come to you for clarity at times. This is one of those times post-inauguration. Where is your head right now? What do you think about what's going on? And what should we be thinking right now? And I'm excited also to bring the great Bill Fletcher into this conversation at the bottom of the hour. But Tom Thomas, your thoughts, sir?
I mean, there's so many thoughts, and I'm definitely looking forward to hear what Bill Fletcher has as far as directions that we should go and strategies moving forward. But just looking at all the executive orders that are coming down, it's tough. I mean, he's doing what he said he was going to do, and we knew this already. You know what I mean? It doesn't come as a big shock that he wanted to pardon all the January 6th insurrectionists on day one, but just seeing it happens is still kind of shocking, if that makes sense. You know, I mean, is that the ending, the revoking, the Equal Employment Opportunity Executive, you know, that, again, is not shocking because, you know, but still seeing it actually happen is shocking. And it's just, it's like everything, you know, the rise in prescription medicine now, you know, all that talk about making the economy better and making life better for everyone. And they won, you know what I mean? Now everybody has to pay more for prescription medicine. And, you know, it's tough. I'm gonna be honest with you. It's tough. I always want to hear what his supporters have to say now. Like, are they happy with what they're seeing? Are they championing it? Are they like, okay, this is what we thought we were voting for? Like, that's the part that I can't imagine that this is where their mind, you know, took them as far as what was going to happen, and they're happy with it. But I don't know. This is tough for me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there are two categories of things, because you said something I think really important that I want to put my finger on, but then also take it a little bit to a different place. And it could be that I don't know why I'm even feeling charitable towards Trump supporters right now in terms of why. And when I say Trump supporters, I don't mean like the hardcores. I mean people who pulled the lever for this man. First and foremost, the people I have just literally no sympathy for, I mean, my sympathy is 50 feet below the ground, is the police unions have come forward to rip Trump for these pardons, the January 6th pardons.
Yeah.
This is where, because all they did was beat up police officers for hours, and then they get freed. You know, we're talking like bear, bear tear gas and all that pepper spray and you know, beatings and, you know, one person dies in it, a police officer dies. And to me, it's like these police unions were so hardcore behind Trump while Trump was saying he was going to pardon these people. And now they're acting shocked that he did and upset that he did. Right. That's infuriating to me. And we know what the police unions are about, but to see them speak in such a way now, like they're shocked, shocked, shocked that this happened, man, I don't even know. Yeah. The okie doke thing, which people like you and me were trying to tell people about, but there's a part of me that still gets why, where people's heads were, is you got all these people being like, ah, diversity, equity, inclusion. You know, they think it's like a corporate training program or something. And they're like, I don't need those corporate training programs. This is ridiculous. I don't need this. I don't need these programs that are frankly relatively new on the work scene. But people like you and me, Etan, and a lot of the hosts on PFW were like, the DEI, the anti-DEI stuff is an okey-doke. They're going after the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Right.
You know, this isn't about corporate training programs in the 2020s. This is about taking away fundamental rights that people like Dr. King fought and died for in the 1960s. And they've had their eye on this for six decades. And now, obviously, they're doing it because they want the right to keep people out of their businesses based on the color of their skin. That's the part of the Civil Rights Act they cannot stand, is equal protection under the law. So, Etan, that's something that for me, is the sort of thing where, okay, people didn't get that was where it was going, but that was clearly where it was going. And I'll be very curious to see some of the poll numbers that come out, not to mention some of the backlash that may take place against certain artists who played the inauguration and thought everything was just going to be hunky-dory.
Well, I mean, so back up a little bit more from the way that it was presented as far as DEI, and it was always presented, oh, we're being forced to hire people who aren't qualified. And that was never the case. That was never a situation. There was no case that they could point to that that's what happened. That's not what it was. And it was cloaked in that, and it was just repeated over and over again until people thought that's what it was. You're forcing people to, then you had someone, okay, well, if I see a black person or a woman or somebody that's flying a plane, I have to wonder, are they qualified to fly the plane? Why would they not be qualified to fly the plane? That's a ridiculous notion, but they kept repeating it over and over again. And then all these people, you know, on the right were like, okay, well, that doesn't make sense. We want to be able to, if we go to a doctor, we want to make sure that the doctor's qualified, or if we go to a dentist, and it became, you know, their made up version of reality, and then it just became accepted. So the reality of it now is they wanted the right to be able to discriminate. And because it bothered me when I hear black people or brown people echo those, like, okay, well, no, we should be judged by our merits, or we should be, I'm like, no, that was never, like, oh my gosh. That now what they're saying is, regardless of your qualifications, they don't have to hire you. So if you are only qualified, they can still not hire you and it'd be no problem. So they can legally discriminate against you. They can legally look at you and say, so all those cases from before where, like just take for real estate, and they would have, you know, appraisals, And one appraiser will be different if they're black. One appraiser will be different if they're white. Or somebody trying to rent a property. The same exact. And they did studies on this. They're all Googleable. Like, you can look at it. Like, they did studies and said, okay, one applicant has the same exact qualifications, everything as another applicant. One black, one white. Which one got accepted? And so now they can just legally do that. Whether you're mm-hmm. a woman, whether you're based on religion, say, we don't want to hire you and we don't have to give you an explanation now. And right. that was the issue. So I see all these people and using Dr. King. Oh my gosh, it's being judged by the I'm like, oh yeah, this is like, it was sickening. All MLK weekend I kept seeing it and kept being sickened by them using, and it happens all the time. They always twist and turn, you know, MLK's words and everything like that. But I just saw it a lot this weekend. It was really irritating to see.
No, and I'll bring this to sports for a second. There was this moment before the NCAA championship game. I don't know if you – I only learned about this afterwards because, honestly, I don't watch college football. But it was Ohio State versus Notre Dame. And, you know, to the credit of the people running that game and organizing it, they got Bernice King to throw up the coin, you know, heads or tails at the start, bringing out Bernice King, the daughter, of course, of Dr. Martin Luther King and the person who is the most public face of the King family. Bernice King comes out and she puts her hand out for the coin, and the referee, who honestly, I'm not trying to judge how people look, but there was a look on his face looking at Bernice King. And she looked back at him like really shocked that he wasn't giving her the coin. And then he flips it himself, and the crowd actually booed the referee.
Really?
Because the PA person said, here to flip the coin is Bernice King, daughter of Dr. Martin Luther King. So of course, you know, even in the world of college football, there's like a very respectful applause. And then the coin is not given to her in a way that was extremely rude and extremely disrespectful. Now, obviously, I don't know the referee's intention. I don't know what was going on. Maybe he just had a brain lapse. Who the heck knows? But to me, it felt extremely symbolic of what we were seeing. And especially on Monday, where the cognitive dissonance between that sick Nazi rally that was called an inauguration, the dissonance between that and Dr. King and everything we are supposed to celebrate on Dr. King's Day was almost unbearable.
Wow. No, I yeah, no, there's a lot. There's so much to talk about with this, and it's only been a few days. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
now,
ahead,
yeah, yeah, but I just think it's so important for our listeners to know too that yes, it's just been a few days, but that these are conscious strategies by the Trump administration. Steve Bannon, his number one secret advisor, has spoken about this for a decade, talking about what he calls flooding the zone with BS, although he doesn't say BS. And that just means you issue like 100 executive orders and you don't even know which way to turn. Yeah. Where do you start? How do you begin to fight back? And before you know it, you're just flailing, not knowing what to do. Am I upset about the Musk salute? Am I upset about the firings of all the federal workers? Am I upset about the mass deportations that are about to take place? I mean, you and I have just spoken about one issue.
Right.
Amongst a ton that's come down. Now, and it's strategy, because if the focus was solely on anti-blackness, we would have a sole focus as a community as to what we need to do. But when you flood the zone, it also serves to divide us and make us feel like nothing is possible, change isn't possible, resistance is futile. Like Bannon says, that's what they're trying to build up in the psychology of anybody who would think would resist.
Yeah, you become like overwhelmed. And it is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, just as,
yeah, I know. Mission accomplished.
You know what I'm saying? Goodness gracious. Here, you want to take a quick break? Let's take a quick break.
Yeah, let's take a quick break right now. And Etan, if you want to talk more about this, you know I could talk about this all day. You know I've been straining to hear where you're coming from on the NBA this year, but I know a lot of this stuff feels really fraught. So I'll take this wherever you want to go, my friend. More than enough to discuss. Let's go to a quick break right now here on WPFW. Here a little bit of a sweet tune by Magic Mike. We'll be back right after this here on The Collision.
A couple of people to the ground.
Yeah.
D1,
D1.
Things are getting just a little tense here.
Racist Christians, I've been searching for you. I've been wondering where you live and what kind of church you go to. Do you pledge allegiance to Christ and not to the enemy? If so, then how you justify hatred and white supremacy? And if you from a family that taught you racism, you could change it. Dialogue and prayer mixed with counseling just might rearrange it. Are you trying to grow or you secretly like to see division? Once you find out Jesus ain't white, do you still won't be a Christian? We come from a place where the pastors use scriptures out the Bible to make slaves obey their masters. Now we trying to turn this chapter, but we can't ignore this data. White cop kill a black man, no jail time. Seem like black lives don't matter. Racist Christians, I've been searching for you.
We are back here on The Collision, here on 89.3 FM WPFW, where we're trying to change the world one broadcast at a time. Magic Mike, what did we just listen to, sir?
That was my man D1, young cat. He's not young anymore. He done blown up a little bit now, but young cat, you know, Christian rapper. One thing that I really respect about him is he likes to call out evangelicals, and he does it kind of consistently. And I, you know, we've talked about this before. You know, it's important for, you know, Christians to call out the MAGA Christians and say, no. What they're doing, that is not what Jesus said to do. Like, or no, those we are evangelicals. Because it's I know we saw this leads into a different topic, I guess. We could talk about it since we kind of are going there. But when, and I don't know the bishop's name. I don't have it offhand.
Yo, I've got this all queued up to talk about it, Todd.
Oh, you do? Okay, well, go ahead.
You're next on my list. I was going to talk about it.
Go for it.
I'm sitting here saying I have to talk about Reverend Bud, Reverend Marianne Edgar Bud, because she is a Washingtonian. Oh, and, yeah, you know, that is our bread and butter here on The Collision, is the D.C. DMV area. And then, Etan, you playing the Christian rap, it flows right into this, man, because
Go for it.
It is, this part is, I hope people heard about this story. Bishop Bud, also known as the Right Reverend Marianne Edgar Bud, she is somebody who gave a speech at the National Prayer Breakfast the other day. And in her speech, she, in a very humble, very manner that we associate with the best of Christianity, asked the Trump administration to show mercy to people who were scared right now. That's all she did.
That's it.
And then she mentioned populations that were scared. You know, she called them, she gave their name light and spotlight. And to me, I think, Etan, we might look back at this as the first tiny dent in Trump's armor in understanding what, if there is going to be an undoing, it might be this. Because this speech might have gone by without a word. You know, maybe a one-day story, maybe. But Trump couldn't help himself. He couldn't help himself. He's calling for her to apologize, long rant in the middle of the night. A idiot congressperson says that she should be deported. I mean, she was born in New Jersey, for goodness sakes. So what, you're gonna strip US citizenship now too? And they're hypocrites on two fronts, Etan. One, they call themselves Christian, yet asking for mercy as a call for deportation. J.D. Vance rolling his eyes at his wife, who's South Asian, you know, about how dumb it is that, you know, it was unreal about how dumb it is to speak out against racism. I mean, it's like, how do you live with yourself at some point? You know, hiding your kids from the camera because MAGA's not going to like the shade of their skin. That's J.D. Vance. It goes back to this issue of both Christianity and aren't these supposed to be the free speech people? calling on her to be deported, you know, using the power of the presidency to you know, literally like stir up violence against a person. So just real quick, one thing I've been doing is I've been putting out the word for people to send postcards to the bishop to show support and solidarity at this moment. So if people want to, you just go to Bishop Budd, B-U-D-D-E, at Episcopal, all you have to write is Episcopal Church House, Mount St. Alban, and then Washington, D.C., 20016. Just a postcard that says, I got your back. You'd be surprised about how much that means. But Tom, you are somebody who tries to live by precepts of Christianity. Does this like hurt your soul when you see things like this?
Of course. So I in my book, Police Brutality and White Supremacy, The Fight Against American Traditions, I devoted a whole chapter to this topic. Bishop Talbert Swan, Steph Curry, Chris Broussard, and the things that kept coming up was the MAGA Christians, the white evangelicals, their version of Christianity. And it's interesting because it was a really deep chapter as far as the way that people have used Christianity to justify slavery, to justify segregation. Now the MAGA Christians and what they use Christianity to justify. And it's interesting, during the swearing in, if you notice, Trump didn't even put his hand on the Bible, right?
And have they said why?
They don't, but listen, let me get to it. Imagine the uproar and the outrage if President Obama didn't put his hand on the Bible. And there's a reason why you don't hear any outrage right now from Trump, because their religion is white supremacy. It's not Christianity. It's not. It's cloaked in the veil of Christianity, but it's not. If it wasn't, then they would have just as much of an issue with Trump as they would with President Obama if he did that. There would be no difference. There would be no reason to say, okay, someone asking for mercy, and you wouldn't get offended by that, because that's in direct opposition to everything that Jesus taught. There's certain things where it's so much of a distortion, so much of a bastardizing of what actual scripture is, you can't even really put them in the same category. They're their own separate category. They're MAGA Christians. So the MAGA Christian doctrine has a certain thing in the way that they interpret, because they know that Trump isn't even a Christian himself. He said this on multiple occasions, not like it's a rumor.
He's lived that on multiple occasions.
Not even living it, because of course you could see someone and how they live and if they live their life according to this, this, and that. But I'm talking about what he's actually said. You know what I mean? He's said, but that's not what is important to him. Now, again, if President Obama would have said that he wasn't a Christian, you know what I mean? Or if Kamala Harris would have said she wasn't a Christian, the way that they would have responded, because it's not about Christianity. That's not what the issue really is. It's really about white supremacy. So pointing out these differences as Christians, they should this is the frustrating part of it. And I got a lot of messages, because a lot of white evangelicals messaged me after I've made a few posts about it, and they say, well, don't lump us in with the MAGA Christians. We don't all agree, you know, don't talk about us as a whole. I was like, okay, that's fine. But if I go to your social media, there should be some evidence somewhere that you are different, somewhere. And if there's no difference, there's no evidence, then how can you not be lumped into the same category?
It's a great question.
And I stand by that still, because it's like, you know, I'll just throw this quote from Dr. King, since Dr. King was misquoted all weekend. But he said, he who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as he who helps to perpetuate it. He who also accepts evil without protesting against it is really cooperating with it. And that's the a lot of the silent white evangelicals, that's the category that they need to look at themselves and say, do they fall into that category? And unfortunately, a lot of times the answer is yes.
And they deserve all our criticism without question. But let me bring this to sports, and because I am very curious about your response. You know, Steph Curry spoke out against Trump during the election. Steph Curry is somebody who's obviously one of the most famous people in the United States and one of the most beloved. Steph Curry is somebody who is a very, very serious Christian in terms of both religion and how he lives his life. Mm-hmm. Now, you know me, it's on. You know I'm never like, why aren't the athletes talking more? You know, because I think people need to talk more, and then athletes will draw inspiration from that and then amplify the message. So please, I am not putting this on Steph, but if you could put this in his mind, what goes through the mind of, say, someone like Steph when he sees something like this and is trying to weigh whether he should say something?
So for me, and I've said this a lot of times, I think it's every Christian's duty. They should feel moved that when they see somebody misrepresenting Christianity to speak out. The same way I feel that it is, that's why I always applaud you and Chuck that always speak out when there's somebody that's misrepresenting Judaism or misrepresenting, you know, what it means to speak out against the activities of the state of Israel. And I always applaud y'all for that, because I do feel that it's your duty to, like, it's what you should be doing. So from my perspective,
duty
as well,
is the right word. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's how I feel. Not just to Steph Curry in particular, but anybody who is a Christian. And so that's why challenging people who are silent about it, I think that's definitely fair, no matter who it is.
Wow. Let me tell you something. At some point, I really do believe that Steph Curry is going to make himself heard on this stuff, because it is intolerable. And it won't just be Steph, of course, but we all know that his leadership is something that will matter because he's Steph. And I hope he takes that up. I hope LeBron calls him a bum again. But I'm talking about Trump, of course, not Steph. But it goes back to this question, though, where, you know, there's no women's march in 2024. There was no mass protest on Monday of the inauguration in the freezing cold. You know, there is a sense that people are in this kind of holding pattern to see what happens. And that's why I thought what Bishop Budd did was so important, because it was the first time I have seen, and since Monday, it was really the first time you see something, and it's Trump's fault, but you see it like resonate and have people really wrestle with what she said, precisely because of Trump's response and precisely because the hypocrisy on questions of both Christianity and free speech are just so blaring and so obvious that these are liars. They want free speech for white people, and they want Christianity that is a mask for white supremacy.
So let me say real quick, Steph Curry was vocal during the elections about, you know, why he wasn't supporting Trump, and he has been vocal. But I think that we want to hear him be more vocal just because of the position that he is. And I think that's one of the things that Jemele Hill actually asked me, was that, you know, are athletes going to be silent? Are they going to?
That's my position. Definitely.
As they were before, are they going to be, you know? And that remains to be seen. And of course, I hope that they aren't. I hope that they do continue to, you know, fight against, speak out against, and everything like that. But another real quick point, and I know we got to go in a minute, but real quick point. Unfortunately, you said this might be a defining moment because of the, you know, backlash that everybody saw on display with Trump and how he reacted to the bishop. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to matter to MAGA Christians. I think they already know. Yeah, I think from that group, I think they are already solidified. They know what it is. And they're in a different category as far as their measuring stick. Now, to everybody else, it definitely should matter. But to that particular group, I don't think it moves the needle. unfortunately.
No, they'll be calling her a DEI hire within the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to do that.
Right. They'll turn their feelings towards her. She did something wrong. And they're already doing it.
An absurdity. Well, let's go to break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk to one of our finest organizers right now. His name is Bill Fletcher. I know people at WPFW are very familiar with who Bill is, with his history with both Trans Africa and the labor movement. But and that's just the tip of the iceberg. But what I really want to do is talk to Bill, and what Etan wants to do is talk to Bill about a way forward, about what we do now, about what maybe are some of the soft spots in this Trump agenda that we should focus on, precisely because they're flooding the zone and have us flailing and confused about what to do next. So let's go to a quick break right now. We'll be right back with Bill Fletcher on The Collision.
Never give up, never turn away. The struggle is just to prove you're worthy. Hear him saying, Joe Rastafari, never leave us. Remember, you've been sent on a mission. Liberate the people, Mama Africa. Answer my prayers, O the Most High. You're my shield, my defense, and I won't lie. Protect me from the jinns and the snares and them evil of people around me. Optimistic about my culture, much better than their guns and their sulfur. Ain't no better way than keeping praises, more bliss, more life. Only Jah alone can make you well. He had created the heaven and the earth. Only Jah alone can make you well. Rastafari take his people from the dirt. Only Jah alone can make you well. He had created the heaven and the earth.
We are back here on The Collision, where sports and politics collide. 89.3 FM, WPFW. Etan, not Mike. Etan, what did we just listen to?
Oh, that was the great SZA Kalonji, my favorite reggae artist right now. Me and Baby Sierra both agree, and he's a big fan of his, SZA Kalonji.
Etan, what you know about music, I swear, is just like towering to me. Like just the sheer breadth of what you listen to, man. Sometimes you got to make a collision playlist that we can circulate to people.
All right.
can I ask you to do that? No more than 12 songs of Etan's favorites that we can send out.
Yeah, that's something we can work on.
We can do that.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I'm sure Magic Mike might have a feeling or two. Well, let's bring it right now to somebody who I think for our listeners needs no introduction, but I'm going to do one anyway. His work with Trans Africa, his work on anti-racist struggle, his work on labor struggle has really been second to none. Not just because he's always been there, but because he's been effective in a way I think few people from the last generation have been. And at this moment, that really makes his mind and his ideas invaluable to consider. His name is Bill Fletcher. Bill, thanks so much for joining us here on The Collision.
You know, it's always a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this. And what did you say? We have about 3 hours to talk? Is that the idea?
No, I know it's a short thing, but... Bill, I got to just jump in right with you. You heard how we introed you. There's so much confusion out there by people who are devastated by what's going on. What would be your first counsel to somebody who's angry but has no idea what to do?
Bill, just to
warm that question up for you. How do you explain the kind of holding pattern that people are in, it feels like, where it just seems like there's a lot of anger but very little activity?
Well, I think that comes from various sources, depending on what one's attitude was towards the election. So if you basically thought the election didn't matter, and now all of a sudden you're saying, oh my God, right? You're in a funny position because you have to try to explain to yourself, why did you sit back when all of the signs were there? It would be like somebody sitting on a beach and watching the water go out and the preparation for a tsunami. And they're sitting there basically just denying it. And then when it comes in and there's devastation, they can't explain for themselves, why did they not see the signals? So that's one reason. A second reason is a kind of demoralization that, why would 70 million people vote for someone who was a sex offender, a felon, who, according to the Justice Department, was involved in January 6th? How do people live with themselves? And I think that there's sort of, folks are stunned because they have, many people have a sort of mythological view of the United States, Dave. And so when you hear people say, this is not us, that's wrong. This is us in the sense of this is the United States. Welcome to it. And let's look at some history. I think another factor is that many of us thought that the facts had spoken for themselves, that Trump had been defeated, and now he's back. And it's like, why were we not able to put this to bed? So I think all of these things have contributed. But also what's happening is the blitzkrieg. And when there is a blitzkrieg, there is sort of, you know, the whole shock and awe. People at first are stunned. Now, this may sound strange. I'm actually not worried in terms of the longer term, because I think people are going to get it together and the resistance is going to reemerge. But there's going to be a lot of devastation, and the freeing of the coup people the other day by Trump, the pardons, are sending a very, very dangerous signal, and one that should lead all progressives to understand that we're going to have to undertake various forms of self-defense, because these maniacs may in fact start constituting death squads. And so we're gonna have to think on that level. But now to this question of what would I say to someone? I would say to someone that the first thing to keep in mind is idea of resistance and non-cooperation. There's something, a term called anticipatory compliance, which was used to describe people in authoritarian situations that before the authoritarians take over, they start acting in compliance with what they believe the authoritarians want. And we have seen this. We saw this with the refusal of the Washington Post to back Harris, the same with the LA Times. The LA Times owner saying that they couldn't write an editorial about criticizing Trump's cabinet appointments. We see it in terms of what Zuckerberg has done with Facebook. And so the first thing is that resistance is essential and non-cooperation. When the MAGA folks in government or otherwise are trying to get us to cooperate, our position needs to be the slogan of the Spanish Civil War. No pasará. They shall not pass. We're not going to cooperate. But the second thing is organization, Dave. And this is, by organization, I don't mean relying on the Democratic Party. I mean that there are forces out there like the Squad, like the Working Families Party, like the Sunrise, like the Justice Democrats, that need to take a lesson from French left when they last year set up the New Popular Front. We need an alliance of left and progressive forces that are going to put a lot of pressure, not only in the Trump administration, but on the Democrats themselves. that
baton.
Right?
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, because you already see people saying ridiculous things like, well, we have to take a nonpartisan approach or a bipartisan approach. We have to figure out ways of cooperating with Trump where we can. This is absurd. You don't cooperate with fascists. So that's where I would start.
It's so insulting.
Yeah.
Etan, any thoughts, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Fletcher, I think that was everything that you said was great. And I'm. How do we collectively unify now? And I have to say, just, you know, in critiquing myself, it's hard for me not to be frustrated with different groups that were voicing their opposition to Kamala Harris for reasons that were missing the big picture to me, you know? And now it's like, okay, now you are finding out that Trump wasn't for you either. And that's happening a lot now. And it's, how do we push that aside and then and unify on one collect? Because right now, maybe it's just because everything's so fresh and all these executive orders are coming down and everything is happening right now. And I'm like, oh, see, we told you this was going to happen. You know, that's where I am personally right now. But how do we move past this to collectively have this unified front that you're talking about? And that is what's needed. Nothing passes. We're all on this, you know, on board. How do we do that?
Well, let me first say that I share your anger and frustration. There are actually some people at times that I'm not going to be speaking with. Mm-hmm. People that called me everything but a child of God because of my attitude towards the election. And now it's like they're waking up and smelling the coffee. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting for self-criticism. At a minimum, an apology. I mean, some of what was said about a number of us that took a stand of critical support for Harris, a number of things were mean-spirited, very divisive. And these are people that at this point, bro, they're not priorities for me. They just aren't.
Okay.
But there were a lot of people that voted the right way and want to do something. So those are the people that I think we have to concentrate on. I think that the, I'll give you an example that there's several things that we need to do right now. One of the things, I was talking to a doctor yesterday who's organizing medical professionals. And I said, one of the most important things we have to do right now is build echo chambers around the country to advocate a different message, a different story about what's happening to the United States, about who Trump and the MAGA folks are and what needs to be done. And the problem is that the right is very good at echo chambers. Mm. Progressives are not. So, for example, the program that you and Dave have is great. Mm-hmm. And it's in this metropolitan area. But the messages that you all are conveying are not necessarily being conveyed in Rochester, New York, mm-hmm. in Chicago, in Minneapolis, in Springfield, Massachusetts. It's hit or miss. What the right does is that they send out regularly talking points to all of their allies in the media, people that write, et cetera, so that these talking points can be repeated. And each time they are repeated, those that are articulating them act like they came up with them themselves. We're not very good at that. So one of the things that we need to do, and this is something that the two of you could do, is start reaching out to other people that have podcasting, radio programs, et cetera, and say, basically, we got to get our stuff together. And we need to be communicating about message. What are the messages that we need to start regularly addressing on our various programs? That's one thing that the two of you could do right now. Right. And the other part is pushing people towards unity. So we need to, and there's some work already along this lines, and groups like the Working Families Party are actually trying to do this. But I think that it's really important for you to be pushing that we need to have a unified program against the MAGA forces and against Trump. So those are a couple of things that I, actually three things that I would raise, Eitan.
Those are good points.
No, those are good points. Bill, the thing that I see hurting unity right now, and I think what you and Eitan said is one of the critical legs on the stool, so to speak, in terms of how do we come back together after the interscene bitterness that did surround the election, because your experience was not unique, and I'm sorry you even had to go through that, but it was not. So how do we come back together? That's one of the legs on the stool. Another one is, how do we focus? I mean, we spoke about this early in the broadcast about how the Steve Bannon strategy is to flood the zone with all of these different attacks and all of these different issues. And if they were, say, just going after prescription drugs, it would actually make things much easier for our side. Right. But it's so much, you don't even know where to start. How do we, and do we need to, or should this be like, let all flowers bloom, let's see if we can fight everything, or do we need to find what that soft spot is?
Good. So let me deal with the first one about coming together. I think that my response to that is that, as I was saying earlier, there's some people I'm not going to pay attention to right now because the damage they did was so serious that there's no way I'll be able to trust them. I think that the other thing is that for those that, let's say, made a mistake, I'll put it in the category of made a mistake, then the terms of working together need to be clear. For example, don't put a knife in my back. I mean, little things like that. And really waking up people to the notion that fighting MAGA is going to necessitate a very broad front that will include a lot of people you don't like. But if you're unwilling to do that, then you need to be going doing something else. So my message is, you know, we go forward broadly. The late premier of China, Zhou Enlai, once said about negotiations that he went into negotiations always with one hand out in friendship, and in the other hand, he had a gun. And I think that the attitude is we build alliances, we come forward to people and say, yes, let us do this. Let us build trust, but we always keep our third eye open. So that's one thing. In terms of how to respond, let me use a military analogy. In the beginning of World War II, when the Japanese went on the offensive, the United States could not defend everything. And so when the other side is on the offensive, you have to make an assessment as to where you need to fight with a possibility that you can block the opponent, where you need to fight more for symbolic reasons, even if you know you're going to lose, and where you can launch a counteroffensive that goes to the soft underbelly of your opponent. That's what we need to break down. So I want to say something about the soft underbelly, the environment. The environment is a soft underbelly of the right. The right has no answer for the environmental catastrophe, except for genocide. So what you see recently within the right, the far right, is that they've gone from denial to now like picking on politicians like they're doing in California, you know, saying that this is all Karen Bass's fault in LA or it's Newsom's fault, avoiding the whole thing. And then you have some elements of the fascists who basically say, climate change is happening. There's nothing we can do about it. And that leads them into the genocidal solution, which is the way you deal with the crisis is that we have to eliminate entire populations. So since most people are not
going to eco-fascism, as it's called.
That's right, eco-fascism, exactly. So what we have to do is launch a counterattack on the environment. And I think we have tremendous bases there. As long as what we do is we connect the question of the environmental catastrophe with the need to fight to rebuild the social safety net. So if you look at what happened in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, Helene in the Southeast, and what's going on in California, it becomes clear that it's not simply about taking preemptive measures against the environmental catastrophe. We have to address that, but we also have to do, we have to take steps to address the impact that that's having already on millions and millions of people. Case in point, yeah. California. Yep. We need mm-hmm. to have, and I've been making this argument with some people in the environmental and environmental justice movements. We need to build campaigns in every state right now to support California. Every state. Because if you look at what these clowns are doing on the Republican side, where they are talking about conditional support to California, they didn't say that when Hurricane Katrina happened. They didn't say that when Helene happened in the South. In fact, they attacked, with the case of Helene, they attacked the Biden administration for allegedly bringing on this and punishing people who were going to vote Republican. Just these absurd allegations. Now what they're saying is that they want to punish California. We need to build a campaign in every state of the union to demand immediate and unconditional assistance to California. That is part of the counterattack, Dave. There's other assaults, including on the issue of federal employees that are going to be attacked. We have to carry out that fight. We also have to carry out the fights around these attacks on DEI, these attacks on LGBTQ populations, recognizing that we're not going to win all of them. But there are some where we actually have to engage in the fight, even if we know we're going to lose. We just have to. We're morally called upon to engage in those fights. One of the things I heard just the other day, Reverend Sharpton was saying that there's discussions already afoot for carrying out active boycotts against two or three major corporations that are backstepping on DEI. And I applaud it. This is exactly right. We need to crush these companies. We have to set an example that where these companies are literally crushed because of their actions.
Mm. Yeah, and it's so you talk about there are a lot of ways to punish California. You think about Meta and that, you know, that just ridiculous puppy dog, Mark Zuckerberg, moving the headquarters from California to Texas.
Right.
Because, you know, as if Texas is somehow some bastion when it's actually become like this fascist Uber state unto itself under Greg Abbott. We're just about out of time. Etan, do you have any last questions or thoughts for Bill Fletcher?
I mean, there's so much more we can dive into, but unfortunately, we're out of time. I much respect to you, and thank you for breaking it. We could talk about this, like you said, in the beginning for three more hours, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bill, do not think this
that.
Is...
Yeah, definitely.
I was just about to say that. Bill, we are going to have to invite you back. I'll speak to Etan and Chuck Modiano, who... We miss who's not here today about exactly when we want to do that, because this discussion has to be ongoing. And we don't just want to be interviewing, Bill. We want to be in dialogue with you about what we can do, both at the Collision and WPFW, to be part of this resistance, not merely commenting upon it. So thank you, Bill, so much.
Absolutely.
For coming.
My thanks to the two of you and to Mike, who I see a corner of back there. Who's a wonderful producer. And I look forward to another discussion. So you guys take care.
Sounds good.
See you
later. Shout out seriously to the Washington commies and their leader, Jedi 5, Jaden Daniels, for resuscitating Washington, D.C. as a football town for everybody out there. And they said it couldn't be done. Back from the dead, Washington, D.C. as a football, as an NFL town, I should say. For everybody out there listening,
hey, Dave, thanks please for that stay frosty. Second,
yes, go ahead, Mike.
No, I said thanks for Mike's that 15 just... seconds talking about the Commanders.
Well, now that I don't have another certain team to talk about, I am.
Things happen.
Things happen. And you know what? I can't lie to you. Even with everything happening in the political world, I'm still dealing with it. My reconciliation has to come with the broader left, and it also has to come with Mark Andrews. So for everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. Go Ravens. We are out of here. Peace.
I'm reminded every time I got a problem. Now all I see is joy even in a problem. Them demons jealous of the light.
Code Pink Women for Peace is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at wpfwfm.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at wpfwfm.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world one broadcast at a time.
We're back! WPFW is excited to announce the return of the Social Justice Calendar, your go-to weekly update on the latest events, actions, and initiatives promoting equity, justice, and change across our community. The calendar's mission is to connect you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Each week, we'll spotlight rallies, workshops, forums, and community actions happening across the region. If you have an event to share, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of said event in a format that is no longer than a sentence or two on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, at least 2 weeks in advance of your event date. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order that they are received. The Social Justice Calendar is yet another way that WPFW connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org. www.theeastsoundnorthandwest.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon, or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Renee Bowser, a staunch trade unionist and